supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, it's a question we get every year. Caterpillars defoliating catalpa trees. Does it hurt the tree? It doesn't seem to. Is there any good coming out of this weird symbiotic relationship? We'll dish with the details after lots of your fascinating phone calls. At 1-888-346-9499. Hillary, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thanks, Mike. I'm in Riegelsville, Pennsylvania, and this is a variation on a question you've had before.
I'm listening.
Okay. I was in a supermarket, and I know that, you know, you're not supposed to buy supermarket roses, but I fell in love with these roses. And they smell like maple syrup.
Huh.
I've never smelled a rose that smelled like maple syrup.
I can smell what's coming. You want to continue smelling roses that smell like maple syrup.
You are so right. They're beautiful, they're gorgeous, and they have no roots. But I have heard you can stick them in a flower bed if they have a bud above ground, put a jar over it for the winter, and that in May, you'll get a little, you know, if it takes, you'll get a little new growth.
Riegelsville. So how far are you outside of Philly?
Oh, I'd say I'm about an hour.
North?
Yes.
Okay. I don't think the outside in a jar is your best idea. The jar would cause excessive humidity, and the best time to do that would be in the spring, when we can virtually guarantee you won't find these same roses again. What color are they?
It's gorgeous. It's okay, here's a petal. It's yellow at the bottom. It shades into a kind of an orangey. Then it goes to a kind of a partial red edge, and it's got these brick splashes on it, and it's got pink splashes on the back.
Woo!
I mean, it's just so...
That girl's dressed up for Saturday night. Yeah, okay.
Yes, she is.
All right, how many you got?
Only three.
Ooh. Okay, so here's what we're going to do. First thing we're going to do is we're going to cut the tops off. We're going to cut the flowers off with 2 to 3 inches of stem still attached, and we're going to put those into a bowl of clean, warm, room temperature to a little bit warmer water with some 7-Up in the bowl, and we're going to fill the bowl first with little glass marbles or pebbles or stones so the flower heads will sit upright. The flowers have to come off, but you can still enjoy them.
Great.
And if the roses are still for sale, if you can go back and find the same rose, you can try this also with a fresher set as well. So chop the little heads off, put them in that bowl, and then what you want to do, you want to go out and get the cleanest, best potting soil you can. You want to get a soil-free mix. You don't want one with chemicals in it. You don't want one that, claims to be a miracle and feeds plants for 6 months. You also don't want to get anything with water-holding crystals in it. You want to try to get the cleanest potting mix you can. Peat, perlite, vermiculite, compost, composted forest products, but no chemicals.
So pretty basic.
As basic as you can get. And then you want to get a good size pot, like a 10-inch pot, with really good drainage. You want to fill the pot with this mixture. Then you want to sit the pot in a sink of water until the mix is saturated. That could take an hour or two. Then you want to look at your stems that you have left behind. You want to take off any leaves that would be underground. Take off about half of the remaining leaves, all of the lower ones. And then, preferably underwater, you want to use a good pair of pruners to make a fresh cut on the bottom at an angle. And instead of jamming them in to the potting soil, you want to use a pencil to make a hole in the potting soil. And you want to drop this fresh cut stem in there, cover that over with the mix. Do the same thing for the other two. Then we're going to find a nice spot in your house with bright light, preferably not direct sunlight. And we're going to mist everything. Then we're going to loosely place a plastic bag, like a produce bag, over top. And every morning we're going to lift that bag up and we're going to mist it. This is the only time that you are absolutely empowered to overwater. You're making a humidity tent, what it's called professionally. Don't let the mix dry out. Don't let water sit in the saucer underneath that you're protecting the surface with, but a good watering will have a little water run off on it that you'll pull up with a turkey baster. And keep looking for new growth. And if you see new growth at the top of any of these things, take them out after about 3 weeks and put them in their own pot the same way, but no humidity tent, but do continue to mist them every morning. Keep them in a bright and sunny window or right directly under a shop light, and then any of the ones that have new growth on them, they will have their own roots. And then in the springtime, when all risk of frost is gone, you can take them outside and plant them where you want them, which should be a spot that's high up on your property, not low, that gets full morning sun, preferably 6 to 8 hours of morning sun, and has a lot of airflow around it. Don't plant it in a crowded location.
Awesome. This will be fun.
If you go to our website, if you go to youbetyourgarden.org and you go to Garden Answers A to Z, the directions are there under rooting roses, R for rooting and R for roses. Now, generally, this applies to the spring because we're talking Valentine's Day roses or Mother's Day roses. So you'll have to keep them inside over the winter. They would be much too fragile to survive winter outside. But you got a chance at it. And like I said, keep going to that supermarket. And if you see a fresh supply has come in, maybe even talk to the person in the floral department. Ask, are they going to get a fresh supply of these roses? Maybe the person will go, yeah, they're coming in on a truck on Thursday. Then get there, do this with right off the truck ones, and you should get 3 for 3 from that.
Great. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, good luck. If this takes hold, give us a call in the spring and let us know.
The next question. Thanks, Mike.
All right. Take care.
Take care.
1-888-346-9499. Aaron, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
Well, thank you for making it, Aaron. Where are you?
Lambertville, New Jersey.
Right.
Near Trenton. Yeah.
Well, I think of it right across the free bridge from New Hope, Pennsylvania.
That's it.
Yeah, that's a beautiful area out there. Great restaurants, great little shops. Hey, and a free bridge,
yeah.
Right? Even if it's a little scary driving across it.
Yeah.
All right, what can we do for Aaron in Lambertville?
So I was tasked to take care of a community garden for the first time this summer, so it's been quite a learning experience for me. But I listen to your show every morning on my way on Saturdays, and I found it very helpful. So I just want to say that I'm a fan.
Thank you.
And so I have cucumber plants and zucchini plants that both were doing totally fine all summer and producing. And then all of a sudden, their roots, like right when it comes out of the soil, started to rot.
Mm-hmm.
While there was still vegetables growing, and the plants, all of them died, and I couldn't figure out what happened.
Right, and the first thing you noticed was them wilting, like from lack of water.
Yeah, they started to not look so good.
So
sure.
If you had pulled up, especially a zucchini plant, and pulled it away from the garden bed and cut into the stalk with a razor blade, you would have found a nasty, greasy caterpillar or two inside. The famous vine borer. The vine borer is the caterpillar form of a day-flying moth, comes into the garden, lays its eggs right there exactly where you said, where the base of the plant meets the top of the soil. The eggs hatch, really tiny caterpillars come out, and they immediately burrow into the vine. And then, as you can imagine, this is a great success strategy because now they're hidden inside the vine. And the vine is hollow, but it's got all these spongy parts inside. So they eat their way up the vine until finally they get big enough that they start eating the outside parts of the vine. And that's when, literally, generally, an attacked plant will become completely separated from the soil by the time you notice the damage. You can just lift it up. It's not even rooted anymore.
That's exactly what happened.
vine borers, all you got to do when you put your zucchini in the ground, because you're using plants, not seeds, right? So what you want to do is you want to use medical gauze, not medical tape, but gauze, like you'd wrap around your arm.
Yeah.
You want to wrap the vine about 2 inches below ground and about 6 inches above ground where it's going to go into the soil. And that just forms a nice physical barrier against the egg laying. You can also use, old-time farmers use tin foil, but I think the medical gauze is better because there's less opening and it stretches a little bit as the vine gets thicker.
Oh, what a great solution. Thank you.
And then whatever else goes bad in your garden, don't panic. But as soon as you see the crop that's affected or the insect or animal that's doing it, go right to the website. Go to Garden Answers A to Z right at the top and click on the name of the plant. Or if you have an idea what the pest is, click on the name of the pest and just follow the directions.
Thank you so much, Mike.
All right. Good luck, Aaron.
Thanks. I appreciate it.
Take care.
You too.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I will appear at the Ludington Library in Lower Merion at 7 p.m. on Wednesday evening, October 4th, and at the Lower Makefield Township Building at 10 a.m. on Saturday, October 28th. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with a tree that produces worms for fishing and more of your fishy phone calls. I'm Wormy Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com. And by Burpee, celebrating their 141st year of providing treasured heirloom varieties, hardworking hybrids, seed starting, garden supplies, and more. Burpee offers no treated seed or genetically modified organisms. Information at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and coming up later in the show, we are going to talk about the catalpa tree, sometimes known as the catawba tree, and the amazing worms that infest it without seeming to do any damage to the tree. We'll tell you all about it after lots more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Evelyn, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Evelyn. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I'm a little distraught about my tomato plants.
And where is Evelyn distraught?
Elk Grove Village, Illinois.
Oh, it's I know Elk Grove, yeah.
Suburb northwest of Chicago.
Yes, yes. My wife's family, many of them were from Elk Grove.
Oh, wow. Small world.
Yes. What can we do for Evelyn in Illinois?
Okay. Well, I've noticed some of these hornworms, and they have the little white protrusion, which I've read on the internet you're not supposed to disturb, but it scared the heck out of me, so I did take them off my plants. And ever since then, I've noticed that some of the branches are dying off, which I have pruned back. Some of the plants have new growth, which I was very excited about. I've got 6 different varieties, and let me see. My heirlooms, which have not had any hornworms on them, but the leaves are yellow and some of them are turning black.
Mm-hmm.
I have an early girl, which a lot of the leaves are black. Husky cherry, some of the leaves have died off, and I've pruned them back.
All right, well, let me stop you right there, because obviously it's very late in the season. Now, have you harvested tomatoes from these plants?
Oh, yes. I've got more tomatoes than I know what to do with.
Good, good. So that
my neighbors don't want them anymore.
There you go. Well, it's time to make sauce, Evelyn. I make a great tomato sauce.
Been there, done that. Not this season. This is the first time I planted my tomato plants in containers.
Oh, okay. What
I used to have a regular garden, but I'm in a condo now, and I have limited space on my balcony.
Okay, so what did you fill the containers with?
I purchased planting soil.
Right, just planting soil.
Correct, and then I did throw some Miracle-Gro in there, and I fed them, and I watched these plants like babies all summer long, and I was so excited.
Well, no, you didn't. No, you didn't, because you would not have gone up to a baby and injected it with anabolic steroids to make it a bigger baby, especially in containers. These chemical salts that were previously used as high explosives are very treacherous to plants. They can cause yes, they can really cause fast growth, but it is the kind of growth that attracts pests like the tomato hornworm. And also, tomatoes have been around for thousands of years without being fed chemical salt. So that's not being a good mom. You do that too often, the authorities may come and put your plants into foster homes. So what you want to do next year is you want to make sure you start with a good potting mix, a good light, loose mix. Try to find it without chemicals in it. Try to find it without any kind of water-holding crystals. How big are your containers? Bigger than a 5-gallon bucket or smaller?
Smaller. A little bit smaller.
Okay. You want
And it's got drainage on the bottom.
Good.
So I know that the water, if I overwater them, the extra water is going to leak out on the bottom. My neighbors aren't too happy about it.
But. Okay. No, we can change that too. Okay. So here's what you're going to do. You're going to mix in some newer potting soil to the old soil. You're going to get a bag of high-quality compost, which you should be able to find at an independent garden center, and you're going to put compost. You're going to put a good 2 inches of compost on the top of the surface. I would recommend you go out and buy bigger containers. Each a real full-size tomato really wants a container that's 17 inches tall and 17 inches across. Only one tomato per container. Then compost on the surface. That'll help prevent disease. And then when you water, don't water each plant individually. Fill up your watering can, give the first plant a little water, move over to the next one, and then do that until you've given each plant a little drink of water, and go inside and fuss about, do something. Come back about 20 minutes later, do the same thing, and continue that until you see the first drips of water coming out the bottoms of the plants. By watering slowly and taking time between adding water, you'll saturate the soil. If it's a really good potting mix and you pour a lot of water in it, 90% of the water is going to rush out the bottom.
I see. Well, that makes sense. That
so
makes a lot of sense.
Slow and careful. I think if you get off the chemical plant food, things will improve. But just really do keep a good eye on your plants. If you see any leaves missing, any branches missing, you know, run your hands inside the plants, look around there. The caterpillars are exactly the same color as the plants, so they can be a little hard to find. And if you do find the spines on the backs of any caterpillars, what you want to do is prune off that branch and just put it down somewhere else on the balcony, because those spines are the egg cases of a parasitic wasp that when those eggs hatch, those little wasps will go out and patrol and stop any future caterpillars from gaining a foothold on your plants.
All righty. Sounds good.
All right.
Well,
good luck.
I appreciate your help. Thank you so much.
All right. Take care, Ev.
Bye-bye. Thanks for the call. Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Charles, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
How are you?
I am just ducky today. Charles, how are you, sir?
Fine and dandy, thank you.
Excellent. Where is Charles fine and dandy?
I'm outside of Atlanta, Georgia, in a town called Cumming, Georgia, just north of Atlanta.
Okay, very good. What can we do for Charles just right outside of Atlanta?
We were queried about a dogwood issue about some trees that we have. We have about 20 or 25 of them on our property, and they have never done well. We bought the property 3 or 4 years ago, and we've tried fertilization, and we've tried chemically, you know, treating for bugs and things like that, and we've just never been able to get them to do well.
Now, wait a minute. Did you ever see any signs of insects?
We did not, but I was wondering if there was maybe some kind of a fungus or something.
Okay, so first of all, an insecticide would not help with a fungus. A fungus would be visible. Insects would be visible. It's really important not to spray randomly, especially when you don't know what you're doing. You could injure the plants, and if these are chemical fungicides and insecticides, you certainly risk personal injury. So it's very important not to spray unless you're absolutely certain and you can see something that needs to be sprayed. Okay. So fertilization, what did you feed them?
We gave them a generic 10-10-10 type fertilizer.
Okay. That would prevent flowering.
Okay.
Yeah. That first number, that's too much nitrogen for a flowering tree. And no plant in the universe, at least on our planet, wants those nutrients, nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium, in equal amounts. So 10-10-10 is a sham. It's meant to appeal to our sense of arithmetic. But if you asked a plant, they would say, what are you, crazy? So, and dogwood should really not be fed. So you have over-salted and over-nitrogenized their soil. How long have you lived there? Were these plants established when you got there?
Oh, yeah, they were there. These trees are probably 20 feet tall.
Did they flower like the first year, or did you start messing with them right away?
No. We didn't do anything to them for the first year. We did observation. We have a lot of plants in the yard. We took the first year and kind of observed what was going on. And when we noticed the leaves were kind of brown and limp and droopy. And
dogwoods are prone to diseases, anthracnose among them. Is the area really crowded by mature trees? Do the dogwoods get good sun? And what time of day do they get sun?
They get pretty good sun. It's typically, frankly, those in the backyard get it in the morning. Those in the front yard get it in the afternoon. We do have some large trees in the yard. We have numerous trees. We thinned out a couple of years ago. We thinned out 25 trees, and you can't even tell they were gone.
Okay, so to bloom and to be healthy, dogwoods need their root flare exposed. They need morning sun, and then they need afternoon shade to protect them from full sun. So the ones in the yard that get the morning sun, if they get a good amount of morning sun and then the trees shade them for the rest of the day, they should certainly be the healthiest trees there.
Not the case. I don't think that's the case at all.
Okay,
it's kind of an even balance. I'd be lying to you but then again, those in the front yard that get the afternoon sun, they're shaded well into the morning. So
yeah, well, morning shade is not what these plants want. That breeds disease. So okay. Two things. They just might not be getting enough sun. But this is a good time of year because you still have leaves to show people, right?
Yes.
So why don't you take some of your worst-looking leaves and take them over to your local county extension office. Call first. They will be able to tell you if anthracnose is a problem with these trees. And then get back to us and we'll tell you the cultural things that you can do to try to hold this disease back. But I have to warn you that when dogwoods contract anthracnose, sometimes there's nothing that's going to make them get better. It sounds like the area has gotten too crowded, perhaps, for them. There's a lot of root competition for moisture, maybe too much shade from the big trees. So I don't know.
It very likely could be. Could be a lot. There's a lot of shade.
Yeah, if you want to just go a couple of years without the 10-10-10 and with better watering techniques, they might recover. But check it out. If it's anthracnose, it might be time to call those trees.
I'll run it over to the Extension Center and get them to take a look at it.
All right. Good luck, Charles.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your time.
Bye-bye.
Yeah.
1-888-346-9499. Trish, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, how are you?
I am just ducky today, Trish. How are you doing?
Great, and I hope you can help me.
I will try to help you. Where is Trish great?
Okay, Trish is from Mebane, North Carolina.
What part of North Carolina? Are you near the coastline? Are you inland?
Inland in the Triangle near the Piedmont.
All right, what can we do for Trish in the Piedmont?
Okay, so my neighborhood planted a ton of juniper rug in order to stabilize a hill, and the juniper is growing, but unfortunately, it is being taken over by this weed called Creeping Charlie.
Actually, although you're calling it a weed, Creeping Charlie is an escaped ornamental. It was introduced as a beautiful ground cover for things like preventing erosion on hills because it would not need to be mowed. It's very good at covering and protecting the soil. It has beautiful purple flowers and has an amazing scent of sage when the leaves are crushed. So for you, it's a weed, but you know the famous definition. A weed is a wonderful plant. It's just in the wrong place for you.
Yes, it is in the wrong place. It's killing the juniper under it.
Well, that's interesting. How low growing is this juniper, Johnny?
Well, it's pretty low. I mean, it's a ground juniper, so it's pretty low to the ground, but the Creeping Charlie just overrides it and covers it completely.
Now, see, if you had gone with a slightly higher juniper, the ones that I'm used to, that branch out and the greenery starts about a foot off the ground with open space underneath, the juniper would be shading the Creeping Charlie. But I can see how the Creeping Charlie, if left undisturbed, could cover the juniper and, quote, smother it, but mostly hurt it by cutting off photosynthesis.
Right, right.
When did the juniper get planted?
Probably about 6 years ago.
Okay, and no effort was ever made to prevent weeds from moving in?
Well, we just this year put down a pre-emergent, but we used to hand weed the Creeping Charlie out, and we would spray with a vinegar solution, but it comes back.
Okay,
you just
so
get rid of it.
When you say a pre-emergent, do you mean corn gluten meal or a chemical?
It was corn gluten, I believe.
Yeah. See, one thing you have to remember about pre-emergent herbicides, whether they're organic or chemical, is they only prevent seeds from germinating.
Right.
And obviously, Creeping Charlie is a very vigorous vine. So one thing you may want to organize is a pulling party in the spring. I don't know what your situation is. Is there a local Boy Scout troop, some church group, some volunteer of sturdy kids who you can induce to come in for a couple of hours, soak the hillside well, and have them pull up as much of the Creeping Charlie as they can?
We did that last year and tried it, and we probably spent 100 hours of pulling.
Yeah, but was this kids or adults?
Adults.
Yeah, we're no good at this anymore. We're too old for this stuff. So many years ago, our lawn care expert, Nick Christians, was investigating what he thought were all these myths about gardening and farming. And one of the ones that interested him most was 20 mule team borax as a herbicide specifically for Creeping Charlie. And to Nick's surprise, when he tested it, it worked. So if you go to our website, go to youbetyourgarden.org, click on Garden Answers A to Z at the top, go to C for Creeping Charlie, and you will find the full report listed there along with the mixing instructions. This stuff has to be mixed very specifically, and it's just the 20 Mule Team Borax you get in the supermarket to use as a laundry additive. but you mix it up in a very specific concentration. And then there's also a special time of year and conditions that the Charlie is most vulnerable under. But the interesting thing is, although it acts as an herbicide on the creeping Charlie, boron is actually a soil nutrient that may actually give the low-growing juniper a little bit of a boost. So that's my suggestion for you. Go back and read that article, because it's been a while since I checked it. And follow the...
I'll do that today.
Get ready to pounce on it at exactly the time that Nick says. Use exactly the right concentration, and you should achieve a good knockdown without hurting the juniper.
Terrific!
All right, Trish?
Yes, thank you so much.
Better than you thought, right?
Yes.
All right, good luck, Trish.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I will deliver the keynote address at the Phipps Conservatory and Botanical Gardens in Pittsburgh during their annual Native Plant and Sustainability Conference on Saturday, October 14th. And I'll host the Empty Bowl Dinner to Benefit Homeless Families on Wednesday evening, November 15th, at the Lutheran Theological Seminary in the Germantown section of Philadelphia. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with a tree that produces fish and worms and more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Fishy Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com. And by Burpee, celebrating their 141st year of providing treasured heirloom varieties, hardworking hybrids, seed starting, garden supplies, and more. Burpee offers no treated seed or genetically modified organisms. Information at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we will get to the strange story of the catalpa tree, the tree that gets eaten down to the ground almost by caterpillars every year and yet seems to come back. It also has beautiful flowers, rot-resistant wood. There's a lot to talk about with this unusual tree, and we'll get right to it after a couple more of your fabulous phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Diana, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being had, Diana. Where are you?
I'm in Morrisville, Pennsylvania.
Just outside of Philadelphia.
That's right, Bucks.
All right, Bucks County, for those outside of our area. What can we do for Diana in Bucks County, PA?
Well, I moved into a house with my family 3 years ago that had two apple trees at the bottom of the yard, and they're about 80 feet apart. The trees themselves are about
35 years old from what we were told.
Mm-hmm.
And one was a Granny Smith and one was a Red Delicious, and they've kind of cross-pollinated over the years. And the first
year, didn't happen. Nope.
Okay, well, that's what we were told. But it's the first year we got apples, and they were beautiful. They were almost like a coppery red color, so that's why I thought that was an affirmation of that cross-pollination. But you know, we got a nice crop the first year. The second year, we got an okay crop, but they seemed to disappear overnight one night. And now this is the third year, and they didn't even, like, really mature. There were some tiny apples for what seemed like a couple days. And again, they seemed to have disappeared overnight.
Okay. How tall are these trees?
They're like a story and a half.
Okay. So the basics of cross-pollination, a plant will always remain a plant. If bees visit the flowers of various species of that same plant and transfer pollen, then the seeds of the fruits that develop are different. So the apples will always be those apples, but if you take the seeds out, the seeds will grow a different apple tree. The same is always true of squash in the garden. If you save the seeds of a pumpkin, you may get a white dipper gourd. But the pumpkin will always be a pumpkin plant, and the gourd will always be a gourd. It's just in the seeds that cross-pollination can show itself.
Got it.
Okay, so you're not doing anything to care for these trees?
No, my husband has pruned them, he said, in the spring, both years.
Okay, that's not the worst time. Dead of winter is the ideal. Early spring is fine. You want to remove any dead wood. You want to remove any branches that are straight up. You want to try to keep the centers of the trees open. There's no magical rules. You know, pruning even randomly and removing a good quarter to a third of the branches is better than not pruning. And winter or spring are the ideal times to do it. Then as much as you can, when the little apples form, wherever you can reach safely, if you can remove half of those baby apples before they get too big, then you'll get a better crop.
Okay.
Now we have the problem of either evil squirrels, possums, and or raccoons.
Mm-hmm. We have deer, too.
Yeah, but deer don't climb trees, honey. Now, they'll eat the drops, but they can't get up into the trees. So what I'm going to suggest, because we don't know what the mystery guest is, you say it's at the back of the house. Can you run a hose out to this area?
Yes.
Okay, good. I would get two motion-activated sprinklers, because you say the trees are pretty far apart.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I would get two motion-activated sprinklers, run two lines out to them. You put batteries in the heads of these things, point them to the area where they're supposed to protect. You turn the water on full blast for them, and then nothing happens until an evil squirrel or a possum or a raccoon gets up in the canopy of the tree. And then the motion-activated sprinkler hits them with a blast of cold water. Well,
okay.
Nothing ever gets used to that. It scares everything away. Some people also find success with taking out an electric wire plugged into a grounded outlet and setting up a radio and a motion-activated light. Like when you drive home, you got the light on your driveway that just comes on when you pull into the driveway. Well, if you could set something up that when there was a disturbance in the canopy, a bright light would shine up on it, an AM radio would start blurting talk radio or a Phillies game.
Yeah.
No, not this show. They'd sit around to figure out how they can outwit me. But those.
Yeah, no, that sounds great. I think my dad did that. He had a radio on the side of our house for a while because there were woodpeckers.
Yes. Motion activated with mammals is the best because there's that startle effect when everything comes on.
All right.
And they've really improved the motion activated sprinklers. There's some great ones out there. You won't have any trouble finding it. And then, like I said, there's also sound and lights. Just think of startling what's up in the trees.
Okay. Can do.
All right.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much. Hopefully we'll have apples next year.
I think you will. I think they'll be good.
All right. I appreciate your time.
My pleasure. Take care, Diana.
You too. Bye.
1-888-346-9499. Brian, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
I am just ducky today, Bri. How you doing, man?
Doing well, doing well.
And where is Brian doing well?
in Chattanooga, Tennessee.
All right. What a great name for a town. What can we do for Brian in Chattanooga?
Well, Mike, I rent and I have a large container garden, and it seems like every time come pre-frost, I try to bring my plants in and I always bring in a few critters with me, and ants in particular. And I was wondering if you had a suggestion for me.
I probably have
suckers out there.
Yeah, I probably have three suggestions. Now, what kind of plants are we bringing back inside? Are these house plants or something different?
Kind of a combination of different guys. I've got lots of hostas and ferns, and then just some other perennials every so often that I bring in.
Oh, okay. Are you sure in Chattanooga that you need to bring in, for instance, the hostas? The hostas are, you know, they don't do anything for you over the winter indoors, and they require a chilling period, and they're pretty hardy. Would the pots themselves survive outside over winter?
Well, the hostas that I've got are kind of like a miniature variety, and so they're in a smaller pot, and so I was just concerned with those freezing, because we do get some pretty cold evenings.
Yeah, but you can't kill a hosta, man. And they don't look like anything inside, right? There's, you know, they're dormant now.
Yeah, no. It was more just keeping them from freezing.
Okay. Is there anything you bring in that actually looks good for you, like functions as a house plant?
Yeah, the ferns. I've got probably about 12 varieties that I bring back in.
Okay. So. And where do you put them? Do you put them in like a living area, or do you stash them in the basement or the garage?
Most of the time they're in living areas. So, I mean, they're still getting sun and everything. Sometimes like they're kind of scattered throughout the kitchen and other areas. Yeah.
So if you were bringing in things like pepper plants, which I do, I grow peppers over the summer, and then I bring them in over the winter, and they become perennial for me. They last many, many years. The problem with them, which is related to ants, is they tend to pick up aphids while they're outside. Mm. So the first thing you do with any plant you're bringing inside is you get a hose or a sprayer with a sharp stream of water, and you wash the plant leaves down really well. That's not going to get rid of any ants, but it'll get rid of aphids. And aphids are the pets of the ants. They keep the aphids around, the ants do, to milk them for their sweet, quote, honeydew. Now, the second thing, and this should work for you very well, is to get a hose or however you want to do it and totally saturate the soil in each pot. And then just keep pouring the water on every half hour or so. Just flood that pot again and then pick it up and move it to just a different location. And then do that again. And the ant should either be drowned or run away. If you want to make sure, then bring the saturated pots inside and sit them in the bathtub with like 6 inches of water in them. And that should get rid of anything that's in it. Now, once you get them inside, if you start to see ants anyway, I would suggest you be ready with boric acid bait traps. Now, you can buy these online. You can buy them at any hardware store, home center, any garden center. And all they are is a combination of boric acid and a sweet sugary bait. So if there is a little ant colony that maybe has little aqua lungs and they've survived your drowning procedure, they will come for the sweet bait, and they will take that back to the queen, who is the only way a colony can survive. And the boron in the boric acid is such a slow-acting poison to ants that they'll feed that to the queen for 5, 6, 7 days before the first ant gets sick. But then it wipes out the entire colony. This is also the best thing to do when you have ants that come inside for the winter because they like your pantry better than they like the outdoors.
Fantastic.
All right there?
Yes. Thank you very much, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, and again, if you have a garage or a basement or something like that, that would be the perfect place for the hostas and anything else that just looks like a bare pot.
Cool. Thank you very much, man.
All right. Good luck, sir.
Bye-bye.
All right, as promised, it's time for the question of the week the strange case of the catalpa caterpillar. Alexis Landis, producer of You Bet Your Garden, please get us started on this week's intriguing question.
I'd be happy to, Mike. Laura in Pennsylvania near Phoenixville writes, "We have a number of northern catalpa trees on our property, three very large ones that are a focal point of our yard, and some smaller incidental ones that I suspect came from seed shed by the large trees. We have caterpillars on them every summer, but they have previously never been overly destructive, and I've noticed signs that tachinid wasps have been laying their eggs on the caterpillars, so I pretty much ignored them. This year, however, the caterpillars have completely defoliated a few of the small trees and are everywhere. I also don't see any signs of the wasps' eggs on them. There are so many caterpillars that I was considering using some BT on them, but I've read that despite defoliation, the caterpillars aren't really harming the trees. What would be your recommendation about these creatures? Thank you for any help you can offer."
Well, first, let's do a little bit of housekeeping. Laura refers to tachinid wasps parasitizing her caterpillars when I think she means tachinid flies. Extremely beneficial. Most tachinid flies look like houseflies. They lay their eggs on or inside caterpillars, and also the nasty slug-like larval form of the sawfly, a rose pest that can be hard to control. Wherever they're planted, those eggs hatch into little maggots that then eat the host creature before it can achieve adulthood.
But that sounds exactly like the tiny parasitic wasps you are always talking about.
They're extremely similar, except for size. Most of those parasitic wasps, like the members of the Braconoid family, are about as big as the period at the end of a sentence in a book, so they're generally not seen by people. But tachinids are the size of houseflies, and they and their eggs are very visible.
But again, both do the same thing, use their eggs to prey on caterpillars.
Yeah, and you know, I'm not sure why she had so few tachinids this season, but that could account for the massive defoliation. The flies may have previously been keeping those caterpillars in check.
We get calls about this problem every year, and you've always said that it's perfectly normal and doesn't hurt the tree.
Yeah, you know, it's one of the strangest symbiotic relationships I've ever come across. At some point in the season, huge numbers of caterpillars will often appear in catalpa trees. So many caterpillars that the trees can be completely defoliated.
But the tree isn't harmed.
Not normally. There are reports of trees being killed after years and years of unendingly heavy defoliation. But these appear to be the exception rather than the rule. And a great USDA bulletin on the topic adds that the feeding by the caterpillars initially causes the injured leaves to release huge amounts of nectar, and that nectar attracts ladybugs and perhaps parasites like the tachinid fly itself.
So just leave these trees alone?
For a one-year event, absolutely. And consider collecting and offering those caterpillars to local bait shops and anybody who likes to go fishing. The so-called catalpa worm, or sometimes known as the catalpa worm, is a prize bait for catching fish.
Okay, so open up a live bait shop. But what about in the future?
Well, these are really interesting trees. They're late to leaf out in the spring, and they're early to drop their leaves in the fall, which may explain why they don't seem to need a lot of time for photosynthesis. They also produce one of the most amazing flowers of any tree. The blooms look like corsage orchids. So I would use the original form of BT, a non-toxic, organically approved product that's been around for decades, to control any caterpillar infestations during that flowering period.
We should stress that BT only affects caterpillars that eat the sprayed leaves of a plant and doesn't harm things like bees, birds, people, pets, frogs, or toads.
Then once we get outside of the flowering period, it's a real coin toss. You could spray the tree with BT if you want to stop the defoliation, or heck, just collect and sell all those, quote, worms for fishing bait.
What do these caterpillars turn into?
A member of the sphinx moth family, but nothing special. It's not an amazingly cute relative like the hummingbird moth or a huge moth like the adults produced by hornworms.
And what about the tree itself?
Two types, northern and southern, both native. The wood is soft but very durable and rot resistant, like cedar and redwood. It's great for building things like compost bins and raised bed frames. Heck, they used to use it to make railroad ties.
That is strong and durable. What else?
Well, we have to warn people that it is a, quote, dirty tree. Those pretty flowers make a slimy mess when they drop. And if the tree isn't defoliated, the seed pods, which are long, cigar-shaped, and very cool-looking, need to be cleaned up unless you want lots of little catalpa trees popping up all over. The tree can also drop limbs, and some people consider it to be invasive. But it's also a great shade tree. I wouldn't plant it near a foundation, a septic field, or a parking area, but I might install one just to enjoy the flowers. And hey, you know, my son Max loves to go fishing. Well, that sure was some interesting information about the catalpa tree and its resident worm, now wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over in detail, just click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden question of the week. Yikes, my producer is threatening to take me fishing if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499. Or send us your email, your tired, your poor, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org. But we won't read it if you don't include your location. And visit our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where nobody cares about your location. And where you will find the answers to all those garden questions you were going to email us, as well as audio of this show, past shows, and our podcast. We send out continued get well wishes to Elizabeth Perez Luna, executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our wormy theme song. Our engineer this week is Al Banks. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out her fine work at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Larissa Sapko and Rich Banowitz keep our website wormy. Orchid like Alexis Landis produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY FM in Philadelphia. Our editor, Al Banks, well, he's gone fishing. Our production assistant, Brett Rader, has never defoliated a tree. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and, you know, I wish I could say the same. Hey, but I don't need any caterpillar help to do it. I do it all with my own two hands. Darn these non-opposable thumbs. Otherwise, I could actually use actual tools to kill those plants. Oh, well, even without those special thumbs like yours, I'll see you again next week. Well, the native pawpaw tree was supposed to be easy to grow. I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next You Bet Your Garden, we'll discuss what to do when the famed banana of the north doesn't produce its distinctive fruits, plus your fabulous phone calls.